What are we going to be talking about today?
Today, we are starting with our first, and hopefully not only, Miyazaki Ghibli movie, and we're talking about Princess Mononoke. No, this is very, very much one of those movies where you started and you're like, oh, that's the bad guy, that's the good guy. And then slowly you're like, wait, I don't know who's the bad guy anymore. Is there a bad guy? What is happening? I can't decide. And then you realize, oh, well, sometimes that's what it is. There is no defined good or bad.
Mm-hmm.
It's where you're looking at it from and what it is, what is happening to it.
So, Ada, welcome back.
Nice to be back.
Yeah. So what are we going to be talking about today?
Today, we are starting with our first, and hopefully not only, Miyazaki Ghibli movie, and we're talking about Princess Mononoke.
Yeah, no, thanks so much for the recommendation. I'm very excited to dig into this. Obviously, Miyazaki films, I think, particularly in the U.S. and a lot of other places are particularly well known. So mm-hmm. hopefully this will be something that people can find easily if they haven't watched it before or they want to dig into it to sort of rewatch it through different eyes.
Yeah.
So Miyazaki films in general tend to have some sort of moral dimension to them,
mm-hmm.
right? He has a strong POV. I think anti-war is probably his strongest one.
Yes.
Right? Which, honestly, a Japanese man of his generation is pretty understandable given, you know, recent-ish history and everything else. In this one, there's a lot going on. It's not exactly one of his earlier films, but it's been around for almost 30 years.
Almost 30 years.
97,
yes.
Right, exactly. So it's been around for a good while. It's had a lot of longevity. Because I think if people think of Miyazaki films or Studio Ghibli, right, this is probably going to be one of the top ones that they bring up.
I think so. Guess. Yes.
Right, along with Spirited Away.
Totoro's
up there. Yeah. Possibly, was it Castle in the Sky?
Castle in the Sky.
Yeah, we're going to start rounding out basically their entire
filmography.
yeah, exactly. I was like, okay. It's like basically, aside of probably a handful of films, the rest have some degree of international success and notoriety.
Yes.
And this one, I feel like, is in the top half at the very least.
And another thing I do notice with Ghibli movies mm-hmm. is that you could be watching it in 2026 and thinking, oh, was this just made like last year? It's very non-specific to the era that it mm-hmm. was made. I feel like you can watch it anytime and feel like it's a very recent movie.
Yeah, I think there's a timelessness to other themes and how he and the rest of his writers and artists approach a lot of these different stories. So there are a number of themes in this film. Which one are we going to be digging into today?
We're going to discuss the moral ambiguity in Princess Mononoke.
Right, because you've got, you know, a lot of other ones, sort of man versus nature. I think that's a pretty common theme as well. But, and this is something I think Miyazaki does to some degree across a number of his films. He does apply a lens of moral ambiguity,
mm-hmm.
right? He doesn't necessarily give us easy answers. He doesn't give us simple solutions. He does ask tough questions and force us, if not necessarily to answer them, and to at least try and reconcile and wrestle with them.
And I think that part of his movies, it just connected that much more to life.
Mm-hmm.
In life, oftentimes you don't have a direct answer or the perfect, you know, resolution that comes tied in a bow. It's just, you know, sometimes it is, sometimes it isn't. And I think his movies sort of mirror that in a very beautiful way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it takes place quite a while ago. You have sort of three main characters.
Yes.
Right? We have, is it Ashitaka?
Ashitaka, which is the main, yeah.
He's one of the three, yes. Right? We have San / Princess Mononoke, right? And then we have Lady Eboshi.
Yes.
And I feel that these three offer different, well, kind of, there's some sort of justice spectrum or something. They're on different ends of mm-hmm. it. You've mm-hmm. got two that believe they're right in direct opposition to each other, at least at the start. And you've got Ashitaka in the middle.
Yes.
Right? Where you can see that he has feelings in favor of both.
Of both sides.
Both at different times and also simultaneously.
Mm-hmm.
And finds himself in the balance of sort of trying to make sort of judgment. And not only keep peace for its own sake, but also point out what becomes, I think, apparent to most audiences. There's a ton of nuance. And one of the biggest things, there are no villains in here.
Yes.
Not really.
So.
There are people who make questionable decisions
yeah.
and are incredibly destructive. but they do not view themselves as bad. And typically, and I want to say entirely, they view their actions as completely morally justified, and as them as good guys, actually. Right.
And I do like how you put Ashitaka in the middle, because it is true that both Lady Eboshi and Princess Mononoke, they're on these... We could place them initially on the two sides of the extremes, but both of them have sort of similar qualities, which is, you know, bravery, intensity, and overall being badass woman. So, you know.
you've got two strong female characters in here.
And even their intro scenes are just like, wow, okay, they're awesome, you know, each on their own end. But I do like the fact that, yes, Ashitaka is in the middle, and he has to be, because from the beginning, and I think we'll discuss maybe like the intro scene and where he's coming from, we hear that he has to go in this journey with eyes, you know, clear of hatred.
Right. So. I think it was like eyes unclouded by hate.
Yes, eyes unclouded by
hate. That's the obviously English translation. So what the opening scene really sets the tone, right? And at the end of it, and we'll go through it a little bit, is all of this is born of like anger, of hate, and a desire for vengeance.
Yes, vengefulness.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly. So walk us through sort of the initial scene that sort of sets the stage for the rest of the film.
Ashitaka, we start with him battling what looks like a demon wild boar of gigantic proportions. Mm-hmm. So he lives in a small village where there's, you know, a lot of elder people and everything. And then it comes in like some sort of giant ball of negative energy. And he's, you know, on his deer, kind of, you know, trying to fight it and sending arrows to it and trying to understand what's going on. We also see that during this fight, he is harmed by whatever is afflicting this wild animal. So it touches him and it leaves a mark, and that mark is what is going to be known as the curse that he has. And so he does defeat the demon, but then we find out that it was a wild boar god that was attacked by...
I think it was shot.
Lady Eboshi's bullet. Yes.
Right, which we later learn.
Yes, later learn.
He goes on this
spoiler
journey.
Spoiler alert. Sorry.
At this point, it's been around for about 30 years.
So, yeah.
we'll avoid too many spoilers in this, but in exploring this particular theme, we'll go into it a little bit. Yeah, so this takes him on his journey, right? It's the classic, where did this object, this bullet, come from? And that eventually leads him to Lady Eboshi.
Right.
And this curse really feeds on hate, right? As it sort of eats him up. It's a very physical manifestation of hate, of anger,
grudge,
of all that sort of stuff.
Right, just right. Festering and eating you up from the inside.
Exactly.
Out.
It's not subtle, but...
Yeah, no.
So it's very clear. It's like, no, look at this. This is literally what's happening here on my arm. That's essentially how it works there. And we've got our three different characters. We talked very briefly about them, but... You know, who is Princess Mononoke / San?
San is a human who was raised by the wolf spirits of the forest, who turns out actually hate humans, but not her specifically, because they obviously raised her. She is very protective of the forest and nature and the spirits, and she's very involved in trying to stop humans, what seems like human industrial progression, that is encroaching upon the territories of these spirits. So that's like one of the key, what looks like the key theme in there. And yeah, so she is involved in trying to stop Lady Eboshi at some point, but we see her as, I call her like a wolf girl, right?
Wolf girl, okay.
Wolf girl. Because she was raised by the wolves, by the spirit mother wolf. Yeah.
Right, that's true. And I think the general contextual backdrop is you have this, I think, enchanted forest.
Yes.
Right, and so you have the forest spirit and all these different things. Incorporates a lot of, I think, traditional Japanese, I don't know if it's called cultural elements, folklore, and religion.
Like
I think Shintoism or Shinto concepts feature as well. Honestly, I think a lot, and particularly when it comes to beliefs and cultural elements that have so much history behind them, where the line is between, say, religion and sort of folk beliefs and
mythology,
and culture, yes, and all sort of stuff. If there is a line, it's extraordinarily hazy.
Yeah.
And so it all comes in together. And a lot of, you know, much like in any film in any particular culture, a lot of Japanese concepts come through strongly,
mm-hmm,
and this is definitely one of them. And so in many respects, she is some sort of embodiment, along with the spirit itself and the wolves, of those defending the forest, yes, and more broadly nature.
Mm-hmm.
And then, so, you know, Ashitaka, he discovers her through his journey again to find this bullet, and also because she sees him and sees human, and has a thought about, like, getting rid of him in that way. But then he finally finds the owner of the bullet, and he goes down to, I think it's like Iron Town is the, yes, the name.
Yeah.
Right? Very, again, very straightforward.
You won't get confused.
Right. And as folks might guess, based off of that, they are doing some sort of manufacturing. Now, we're not talking like 19th century factories and such, no, but you've got different people building weapons primarily, right? Firearms of some variety, whether they're guns or like small handheld cannons. For her, so finally Ashitaka meets her and kind of says, justify yourself. This bullet that I found killed this boar, you know, and this curse is the result, fundamentally. You're destroying the forest. You're doing all these terrible things based on what he's seen thus far. And, you know, given where he grows up as well and the culture he grows up in, he's like, right, you need to respect these things.
Yeah.
Right? And she hears him out.
Yeah.
To some extent. Right? More like, okay, are you done talking now? Now let me show you.
Actually, let me tell you what I'm doing.
Right. And I think that's the interesting thing, because I think up to this point, again, we're assuming this is a classic man versus nature type, yes, of dynamic.
Yeah.
And therefore, nature will be good, right? This is the hero, you know, whether it's a physical manifestation or an abstraction, mm-hmm, that we want to be supporting. And man, or in this case, woman.
Yes, is the bad guy.
Right, is the bad guy trying to destroy it. What do we discover that is actually going on from her perspective?
So she's actually helping people, and her little town or city, mm-hmm, her goal, yes, is to expand and to make, you know, more weapons and to become greater and more powerful. But the people that are there helping her create this community for her, that is, she's doing good. She's helping these women who she's buying their contracts over, mm-hmm, from what we understand are brothels.
Yeah.
And so she's freeing them, essentially. Mm-hmm. She's giving them work. And, you know, they're there in these, I guess,
they're working sort of these, like, bellows for, yeah,
for the furnace. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, you know, manual labor, but they're enjoying their life, mm-hmm, in freedom. And she's given help to the lepers, which are, we see as these bandaged individuals, mm-hmm, that are helping craft these weapons as well. So she's given them, like, sort of this dignity as, mm-hmm, to, you know, you are valued, you know, your work is valued, whether or not you have that disease, which they were not previously. And so for her, it's not really a bad thing that she's using the forest to do these things. Like, she's cutting down the trees.
She's doing it for a good cause, if nothing else.
Yeah, her point of view is, this is a good cause. I'm helping these people. I'm helping these different groups of people. And they're, you know, thriving under my rule. And yeah, she's not really concerned that her actions are having any particularly negative consequences on anybody else.
If anything, she complains, like, every time I chop down bits, the force just grows back.
Yeah.
Right. It's like a menace.
Yeah.
from her perspective, they're on this little island,
essentially. Sort of, yeah.
It's literally a bit of an outcrop next to it.
Yeah.
And so there's, it feels like, there's nothing to retreat into. I think there's like a river nearby, yes, or a cliff. So it's like the forest and then them and then kind of nothingness.
Mm-hmm.
So it probably does feel like they're cornered, they're boxed in, and they've got no choice. It's either fight back from the perspective,
or get overtaken.
Get overrun. There's a really nice scene when she's taking him to see the work of the lepers, where I think one of the lepers, who must be in an advanced stage and was not doing well, first says to Lady Eboshi, you know, basically, don't look down at or chastise this boy, because she's being quite patronizing. Right. Like, you're a fool, you don't understand, you've got these ideals without perspective. You know, I'm doing a grand, building something great here, and I'm helping people. Mm-hmm. And this forest and all these other, like, beasts and what have you are just trying to tear all this, these great things down. But this leper also says to Ashitaka, it's like, you know, Lady Eboshi is the first person who made us feel human, right? Yeah. And respected. And he said dignity.
Yes.
Right? And so I think on one hand, he was saying, I understand where the boy is coming from, right? Yeah. He has a point. But also to Ashitaka, it's like, but please understand that Lady Eboshi here is not some villain. She is trying to build something for us. She is doing all these things in support of us in a way that no one else would do, right? That normal people would not help these people escape the brothels, would not help lepers. It's usually just shunted off and wait for them to meet their untimely end.
Yeah.
And that was it. And here they get dignity, they get purpose, they get a life, they get taken care of.
Yes.
But it's also not in the sense of, like, charity. It's like they're earning
it. Correct. Yeah. So they're working for it. And that's why I said the word dignity, because she's not just, you know, giving them food and shelter and, like, oh, don't worry, like, you're fine. No, she's saying, you know what? Yeah, you have something to offer to the world. You have a life purpose. Mm-hmm. And, you know, she's kind of bringing that out of them. So,
yeah. And I think that opens up Ashitaka to considering another perspective, because after this, he goes to where the women are working the bellows.
Yes.
Right? And he's asked, hey, can I try this too? Yeah. And so he does it, and they're all getting, you know, interested because he's this young, handsome somebody.
Yeah. and they're like, ooh, who's this little man?
Yeah, exactly. He takes off his shirt.
This young man.
it's a much more pared down version of, I think, what we'd see in a lot of live action films. But, you know, he asks, like, this seems like, you know, really, this must be a hard life or hard work. Like, it is hard work, but it's better than being in the brothels. It's sort of, it's work where they feel respected, right? They even sort of, they say jokingly, but it's also serious points, like, and the men know their place.
Yes.
Right? And so they get to be their own person. They have empowerment to the degree that that's available to them in their circumstances in society in those times. And so they view this as a good thing.
Right.
And the forest, or the forest spirit, or the animals have killed people they love. I think later one references a slain husband, for example, right? And so this confrontation with nature is a very personal one where they feel aggrieved, right? And that sort of feeds back into this whole thing of anger, of hate, of vengeance, and is something that Ashitaka points out, the cycle, right? Where does it stop?
Correct. And I think to his benefit, he does take the time to go and see each of them. Well, I mean, Lady Eboshi's also showing him around, but, you know, he interacts with these people and he's trying to understand that perspective that, okay, I've come all this journey to find the source of this bullet and I come here and then this lady is telling me I'm actually doing good. What's this about? Let me understand. So he did have, let's say he did have a stance, but he takes it further where he pauses, like, his opinion and he just kind of looks at it unclouded by, you know, judgment and completely on the basis of wanting to understand, wanting to learn, which, like I mentioned, this is why there's this timelessness to these movies, because this is something that's still necessary. Exactly. It's like, sometimes you open a comment section and you're like, wow.
First of all,
anyway,
comment section is almost always a mistake.
Very much. Especially on, like, sensitive videos. You open the comment section, you're like, why am I reading this?
Well,
I didn't want to remember how depraved humans are of compassion.
Right. Briefly on this one, for years, early days of internet, like when I was in university and such, I would be on these forums and such because everyone my age was doing that sort of thing. It was the hot thing.
Yeah.
And eventually I was like, this is so toxic and I'm not having a good time. So I exited for almost 20 years or something.
All right.
But then, you know, I came back because I was part of, like, a neighborhood community. And there was a subreddit, and I was just like, oh, they're looking for another mod. I was like, okay, yeah, sure, I can do this, why not? And it's not bad, but like some, like a lot of the things you read, you're like, what is wrong with you? Like, why, why are the conversations do not need to be like this? It's like, I get it. People have, you know, different perspectives and all of that, but there's got to be a more thoughtful way. It doesn't mean we all need to be...
The screen forms some sort of, like, filter of ignorance, and it's just like, poof, they forget that they actually have to be interacting with humans, and you're just typing it because of that's how it is.
And there's also, there tends to be, not always, but often, I think, I don't know if the majority, plus or minus 50%, I don't know where it falls, but it's enough to be concerning. Well, there's not an openness. People come in with an axe to grind, right? A perspective. Yeah. And it could even be a decent, we'll call it moral perspective, but the lack of openness to where the other person's coming from, which could also be a reasonable moral perspective.
Right.
Makes it, you're not having conversation. No. You're just exchanging talking points.
Yes.
And we see this in politics and everything else where that's literally what's happening, right? It's like, okay, I said my talking points. You said your talking points. Well, mission accomplished.
They'll decide. The people will decide. But
something like that, right.
And yeah, it's sorry to loop it back to where it's supposed to go. So that's where I see Ashitaka as the actual middle ground, where he's right now, we're talking about when he was in the Iron Town, and he's just there to freely like learn, very open to, okay, tell me, what is your experience here? I thought, you know, are you like in danger? Are you like, you know, living a hard life? What is your experience? Yeah. And I'm going to accept that answer from you.
He will to some extent, right? He will take it in and examine it, sort of turn it around and be like, okay, I see the shape of this thing. I understand why it is the way it is. Although I framed him as sort of being in the middle, in a way he both is and is not. I think the real difference is that you've got these two sides that aren't open to the other, because they feel it's a very self-righteous position, right? And he doesn't have that. And so he definitely has a take. He goes in basically accusing her of all
being
these terrible things.
Being the source of the quote,
And what he said is not necessarily factually untrue, but it's incomplete.
Yes.
And the other way around, when Lady Eboshi says basically these animals and the spirits in the forest are trying to destroy us, I'm like, that's not how they view it. But I understand why you feel that way, because that is kind of what your experience is. And that's why you sort of, that's what you feel like you're staring at.
And that's what happens later on. There's a scene where the wolves are, you know, trying to stop them from climbing into the town, and, you know, she has to retaliate and harms one of them. But because that's their daily experience, basically, is these animals are coming to to attack them or to harm them or to stop them in their way.
Yeah.
And I do want to highlight that we don't see this for Lady Eboshi, but for San, she does go through a, I don't want to call it transformation.
Who does?
San, the princess herself.
She
doesn't really, it's not like she changes her stance, but she becomes a bit more flexible in accepting.
Well, even of accepting, Ashitaka?
Yeah.
Because she says at the end, like, I love you, but then they still
need to be in the forest, like, right, that, which
like,
is fine.
He's like, and I'm going to go be in Iron Town, but we'll, like, we'll meet.
Yeah.
It'll we'll hang cool. out. We'll hang. We'll chill. Forest and chill.
Yeah. We need to use that there. Forest and chill with the princess.
Yeah, exactly. No, absolutely. Yeah. All right. So we've worked through what I feel like is the core of what's going on with the exploration of more ambiguity in this film. You have these almost three sides, two of them of which are inflexible, right? They're dogmatic, I would even say, right? And then one that is open, right? Mm-hmm. Because he is not really neutral. He does have an opinion. He does feel certain ways about each position. And yet, he kind of comes to a different conclusion. And he is, in some ways, the vehicle through which some variety of compromise or coexistence can occur, right?
Yeah, coexistence, definitely.
Again, much like in our real world, right?
Yeah.
If you're open to things, it doesn't necessarily mean you need to agree, and some things might be beyond the pale, to be fair.
Yeah.
But I think by and large, there's a lot of space for people to figure out how to rub shoulders and get along.
And make it work.
Yeah, exactly.
Without it having to be A or B, it could be completely like a new format. Like, yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
At the very end, right, we kind of, it all comes to a climax with the conflict between the forest spirit / sun and Lady Eboshi. Broadly speaking, what we get after that is some variety of destruction and renewal of the forest itself, right? And it's fundamentally changed. It's not sort of enchanted as it once was. It's not gone either.
Mm-hmm.
And I do feel like Miyazaki or the other authors, I'm not sure who were involved in the writing.
Mm-hmm.
So I might be giving him undue credit, I'm not sure. I feel that they're talking about how when things change, it's never going to... And again, you know, in our daily lives, people talk about making things the way they used to be.
Yeah, it can't
But these things tend to exist in a certain time. You can now, and that time has so many different factors. You can never make it exactly the same.
Yeah.
Right? Doesn't matter if you're talking politics.
Yeah. Probably shouldn't. I think that's also the...
Sure.
The message that we're getting, you probably shouldn't be trying to go back to how it was, whether it was a town that was mm-hmm. destroyed, whether it was the forest that would, there's no point in you trying to go back to how it mm-hmm. was, because how it's becoming is probably better, or is probably worth more effort than
trying to go back. Well, the previous status quo was untenable.
Right.
That's why you had this conflict in the first place, because you had these sort of two dogmatic sides that were not budging. And so the inevitable conflict happened, and it had sort of just blew up, right? And then out of that, there has to be some new, we'll call it status quo, that forms from this.
Right.
And so they have, and sort of this messy, uneasy, tacit understanding and agreement of even if it's begrudging coexistence,
but it's still a transition. It's still a transition to like something new. And I don't think that it takes from the previous ones because mm-hmm. we lose the enchanted element of the forest.
Yeah.
And the town loses like itself, obviously, mm-hmm. because now they have to...
Everything's been destroyed fundamentally.
Right. But it's this transition into having to accept that your side or your position doesn't exist anymore mm-hmm. and was maybe potentially slightly wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And then just, you know, agreeing to move into this new unknown that still involves both sides, but in a different kind of arrangement.
And in that way, as much as I think Miyazaki comes in with a really strong moral POV in all his work, there is, if not necessarily a moral flexibility, a pragmatism around his moral perspective and what he's presenting. And I think again, the vehicle Ashitaka is the main way of saying it. It's like, look, you don't need to agree. You don't even need to accept something. But understanding if you're going to come to something that is workable is necessary.
Right.
Right. And the two sides, we'll call it the main sides in this one, couldn't do that to their own mutual destruction.
Right.
And they've kind of had to learn the hard way, but they've really been forced to. It's like, you've got no choice because you've both been destroyed.
Yeah.
And now you've got to start over. And this time you have an opportunity to be more flexible and to, if not necessarily cooperate, at least not be as confrontational.
Right. And I think in this instance, we get a little bit of that hint from like Lydia Bushi's side, but mm-hmm. I think San is the one who goes through this sort of transformation into a more flexible, like you said, it's not entirely that she's accepting it, but she's, you know, okay, like I have to deal with it this way right now. It's like I can't just keep using the same intensity that I had before.
I think also her starting context is different from Lady Eboshi's, right? Lady Eboshi is a human for humans, right? I'm simplifying it, but that's kind of the gist. And San is a human who's been raised, we'll call it by the forest broadly, by these wolves. And so she's of one place, but really only knows the other.
Right.
And is fighting for that one. And so when it all sort of blows up and everything's been destroyed, she also gets an opportunity to reevaluate,
right?
And recalibrate herself.
Correct.
And it doesn't suddenly mean, like, oh, wait, I'm human. I need to go be pro-human or something like that, right?
Exactly.
But I think it shows her the weakness of that dogmatic perspective and pursuing it that way. And so, yeah, as you say, she becomes a little more flexible, a little more circumspect to some degree. I think Ashitaka is still the only one who truly is.
Yeah.
Like, the two sides come a little closer. Not that much, but I think the biggest thing is they shift in terms of just flexibility and tolerance.
Yes.
Because before, they're like, the other side cannot be tolerated.
Right.
And that's a tough... at that point, then you make it, well, there can only be one.
Yeah, exactly.
Reference another great film.
It's A or B. No, true. That's nice. But again, we were talking about this, and I realized how timely it is of a topic. And I mean, yes, this is from 97, and this is like a fictional work of, fairy tale. But it really speaks on, you know, how humans have probably been since humans are. You know, this ideology of like, no, I'm right and that is wrong, and what I don't know scares me, or what I don't know has to be destroyed. Or
in another way, I think it really comes down to empathy, right? Because that's what Ashitaka...
Compassion as well.
Right. Yeah. He shows the ability to empathize, even when he's not convinced that they're right. He's like, but I understand why you feel this way. And that feeling is reasonable on some level, and I can understand, you know, how you got there.
Yeah, like he validates. My conclusion. Like he validates, like, yeah, you have the right to feel that way.
And exactly.
Even though I don't understand it yet, but
right, or even if I disagree with
right,
you know, your decision, like how to act on
how to act
feeling.
On it. Yes, and right. I think I love the embodiment of this particular acceptance of him. It's that scene where she's like, she's like, you know, like trying to hit him, and he gives her a hug, and it's just, I love that.
Yeah.
Okay, I think that's adorable. And then there's another scene where she's like about to stab him, and I'm like, oh, this is a great, this is a great example of a healthy relationship.
Yeah, and people kind of, like, their emotions come out, right? That, like, that they feel these things so deeply, right? The hate, the everything, right? I mean, some people call this, like, this sort of come-to-Jesus moment.
Yeah.
I know, not the same cult, but...
Right.
But every culture, I think, has a variety of this.
Yes.
Obviously by a different name, but...
Probably.
But conceptually, in the abstract, it's the same notion.
It's the same notion.
I think in having Ashitaka play the role he does, we also see, though, that openness and flexibility and understanding and empathy are not necessarily easy paths. It's not like, oh, if you figure that out, this is just going to be a walk in the park.
Nope.
It's like, no, I think about when Lady Eboshi and San are fighting, right? And he comes in, and with the strength that's bestowed on him by the curse, he's able to basically break up the fight, knocks them both out. And the townspeople at first are like, oh my gosh, what have you done? He's like, don't worry, she's fine. Please take her. I'm going to leave with this chick.
Yeah, your empress is fine. I'm going to go help this girl.
Right. And even when he's trying to leave, and you've got the wooden gates, and they're like, it would take 10 men to open this thing.
Right, and he's just like,
you know, please don't make us do anything. You even see with the guards a sense of empathy, like, we respect you. We have our side in this, and that we've chosen, that we believe, but we respect you. Still, they're not going to let him out, and he ends up being able to go anyway because, again, for the same reason, he was able to break up the fight. But he gets shot, and when he gets shot, it's actually a mistake.
Yeah.
Like, the woman originally lines it up, but the other one, like, what are you doing? And then in the chaos, someone, a light hits it, and it goes off and goes straight through him.
Yeah.
Right? So it does show, like, the cost of trying to be an arbiter. Like, it's not easy.
No.
I can say that. I can confirm that from experience. Where...
Okay.
Oh, for sure. Like, where I've, whether intentionally or not, found myself in this sort of position. And sometimes people appreciate it, but sometimes I think they take the frustration out on the person who isn't giving them a certain emotional satisfaction of agreement. Mm-hmm. And I'm just like, I'm sorry, but like, I can't do that.
Yeah.
That's not the role I play here. If I do that, then I lose credibility.
Right.
But they're like, yeah, that's not my problem. That's your problem.
Oh boy. Jeez, that's fun.
And it's not that these things, playing this role as Ashitaka does, doesn't mean you don't have a belief.
Right.
Quite the opposite. You typically do. You have a moral compass. Again, it comes.
But you have that clarity as well, yeah, exactly. to see both of the other perspectives and to try exactly. to understand them. Doesn't mean that changes right. you, who you are, or you know that it makes you have a different opinion. But exactly. yeah, he has that ability to like hold these different ideologies or thoughts right. and understand them and then go from there.
Right. You know, we'll call it fairness and openness. Is not the same as indifference, and sometimes yes. not even the same as neutrality.
Because he's not trying, it's not necessarily that he went there to be neutral mm-hmm. or indifferent. No, he went there to resolve, like, hey, what's going on here? I need help for this. Why did it even come about that something so small started something that snowballed into like this giant demon of hatred or like curse of hatred?
I think a lot of people think of it as like a children's film because it's animated.
Right, but
children can watch it.
Yeah.
But it's heavy.
It's one of the heavier Ghibli, I feel, like that I've seen so far, to be very honest. It has a lot of what I would call graphic scenes, you know, like depicting, you know, bloodshed or yeah, like harm and violence and like bodies. So mm-hmm. it's a bit stronger sort of yeah. element, but the message is overall is very like Ghibli. And even funny thing is, I'm wondering like Ashitaka's like shot and he's like in the water and I'm pretty sure he's just like, why did I leave my village?
I know, right?
Like, why did I come all the way here just to die with another bullet? Yeah. So. Yeah,
exactly.
But yeah, it's a bit of a more serious. A little serious. Bit of,
you know, Wizard of Oz, click the heels. Yeah. There's no place like home. Go home with this red elf.
Yeah. Be like, let me just pass in my village. It's like,
you know what? I'm actually going to let you folks sort this out.
Yeah, I'll take this curse and let you go back home.
Exactly. Here's your bullet back. I'm good. Peace. That would be hilarious.
That would be hilarious.
Yeah, any last thoughts on this one?
No, this is very, very much one of those movies where you know, you started and you're like, oh, that's the bad guy. That's the good guy. And then slowly you're like, wait, I don't know who's the bad guy anymore. Is there a bad guy? What is happening? I can't decide. And then you realize, oh, well, sometimes that's what it is. There is no defined good or bad.
Mm-hmm.
It's where you're looking at it from and what it is, what is happening to it.
And yeah. Personally, I love stories where there is that moral ambiguity. Not because it's like, oh, there's no such thing as right or wrong. Because that's not actually what he's saying in this film. It's saying there is complexity, there is nuance. And there is perspective,
right?
And difference of experience, and all these things inform what one considers moral and right.
Yes,
because on both sides, you see not only a sense of like being correct, but like a moral righteousness.
Yes,
right. And in a way, you're like, well, these can't both be true, but in fact, they are, and they're also both wrong to a great degree, but not for the reasons they think.
Right.
And this, as I mentioned before we got started, is why I tend to get frustrated by Marvel films.
Here we go again with the hate. Next episode is a Marvel movie. That's like, it.
All right, no, Michael, we're doing the entire filmography.
The entire 27 or 32 movies. I don't know what they are, but
Maybe we make that. If not, perhaps the next one or one of the future ones.
Yes.
I would love to do that because my understanding, because I didn't grow up reading comics,
okay,
is that a lot of the comics themselves actually had a lot of that like messiness and gray. Right. And that's really compelling. That's why I say, like, I look at Batman or something like that.
Yeah.
I came around on Superman, but at first I was like, this guy's boring. He's just good. They just created Kryptonite because he's too good.
Yeah, he's just this, you know, like, the sunflower, everything is great type of guy.
Exactly. Yeah. Anyway, no, this is a good film, but I appreciate its exploration of moral ambiguity, difference of perspective, and the need to be open and to understand, and that this is not the same as accepting.
Correct. Yeah, being open, wanting to know and understand, and having that clarity of all these different perspectives to then, you know, not verify, but to then be sure that, okay, because they think they're right,
mm-hmm.
doesn't mean that they're never going to do wrong, and that doesn't mean that their right isn't wrong for someone else. But that is what makes the world. Like, you can't be only right or you can't be only wrong. It depends. That's what it is. It depends.
Context is king.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Well, thanks again. I really enjoyed this film. Glad you suggested it.
Thank you.
I'm sure we'll be doing more animated films, whether from Japan or elsewhere.
Yes.
And also, it sounds like we're going to add some Marvel and superhero films to
our
roster. Absolutely.
Cut into, like, the Marvel intro. All right. Well, thanks again. Thank you. It was great. Nice to see you again.